What happens when the monster under your bed becomes your addiction? When the very person who terrifies you also makes you feel more alive than anyone else? God of Wrath explores this intoxicating paradox through the story of Cecily Knight and Jeremy Knight. Their relationship begins in the shadows, literally, during a secretive initiation ceremony in the woods surrounding King's University. Disguised with a brown wig and numbered mask, Cecily infiltrates the notorious Heathens Club, relying on her superpower of invisibility to gather intelligence on their Russian mafia connections. But her carefully constructed anonymity shadows when Jeremy, the most feared heathen, discovers her hiding place. Their first encounter sets the tone for everything that follows. His golf club pressed against her throat, her desperate improvisation revealing her virginity as a bargaining chip, his cruel amusement mixed with unmistakable interest. Most disturbing is Cecily's own reaction. Beneath her very real fear pulses an unexpected thrill that both confuses and shames her. This primal response foreshadows her internal struggle throughout the story. How can she trust her own judgment when her body and mind seem at war? The forest becomes a perfect metaphor for their developing relationship, dark and primal, filled with hidden dangers and unexpected paths, where nothing is quite what it seems. What starts as a game of predator and prey evolves into something far more complex, challenging our understanding of desire, consent, and the thin line between protection and possession. They couldn't be more different. Cecily spends weekends nursing injured strays, her apartment filled with rescue plants and secondhand furniture that tells stories of compassion. Jeremy is heir to the Petrov crime empire, raised where mercy equals weakness and violence is currency. Their worlds collide when Jeremy discovers Cecily's profile on Primal, an underground app for predator-prey fantasies. He intercepts her intended match and orchestrates their encounter in the forest near the Heathen's mansion. Cecily's fantasy shatters when she realizes her captor isn't Landon, her coffee shop crush, but Jeremy Petrov, a man whose reputation terrifies hardened criminals. Jeremy infiltrates her life, appearing unannounced, leading expensive gifts, demanding weekly meetings at his isolated cottage. His obsession is contradictory, tracking her movements possessively while memorizing her favorite foods and fulfilling her darkest fantasies with intensity. What makes this compelling is Cecily's conflicted response. She recognizes their toxic arrangement, yet can't deny their electric connection. He sees through her walls to desires she's always denied. I want to be ambushed in a dark place and taken against my will. These fantasies both shame and excite Cecily, our window into taboo desires. When Jeremy forces her to play Russian roulette, she's terrified yet exhilarated. Their encounters are violent and primal, yet Cecily never uses her safe word, blurring the boundary between fantasy and reality. The story suggests these dark desires don't make Cecily broken, but are aspects of her sexuality she's struggled to accept. Jeremy provides a judgment-free space for exploration, understanding her needs even when she can't articulate them. This psychological depth transforms the narrative into an exploration of self-acceptance. Cecily's journey involves not just falling for Jeremy, but embracing parts of herself society tells her to suppress. When she dissociates during extreme stress, a trauma response, Jeremy's unexpected tenderness creates bridges between their worlds. With his warlord build and skull tattoos, Jeremy physically embodies danger. Cecily labels him a sociopath or psychopath, lacking empathy and remorse. Yet the story gradually reveals deeper dimensions. Jeremy's perspective chapters unveil his troubled childhood with a mentally ill mother who became a ghost, and his fierce yet controlling protectiveness toward his sister Annika. His vulnerability with Cecily stems from fear she could never truly choose him. What makes Jeremy compelling isn't that he changes. He remains violent, possessive, and dangerous, but that we understand his logic. He arranges accidents for men who hurt Cecily and plans revenge on her abusive ex-boyfriend. His violence, never justified, becomes contextualized as a warped expression of care. The novel doesn't ask us to forgive Jeremy, but to understand him as someone shaped by an upbringing where power meant survival, with his obsession with Cecily becoming his one genuine connection. Both protagonists carry deep wounds that shape their behaviors. Cecily suffers from sleep paralysis and dissociative episodes triggered by witnessing sexual acts, while Jeremy's trauma manifests as control issues and fear of abandonment, consequences of his mother's mental illness. These damaged individuals become instruments of healing for each other. Cecily helps Jeremy understand his mother differently, explaining that she fought her demons out of love for her family, allowing him to reconnect with her after years of resentment. Jeremy provides space for Cecily to confront her trauma. When she's sexually assaulted by a classmate named Zane, Jeremy eliminates the threat by slicing Zane's throat. Though extreme, this violence represents an end to Cecily's fear, enabling her healing. Their relationship, despite its toxicity, becomes a crucible for transformation. They completely see and accept each other's darkness, a radical form of unconditional acceptance that helps both integrate fragmented parts of themselves. This story explores the journey of acceptance, both of others and ourselves. Cecily confronts desires that challenge societal norms, grappling with shame over her response to Jeremy's dominance and questioning her identity. Jeremy's journey centers on emotional vulnerability. Having survived betrayal, he's built walls, trusting only his fellow heathens. When he discovers Cecily provided information leading to the mansion fire, his violent reaction reveals deep trauma and trust issues. Their reconciliation demonstrates the complexities of forgiveness. Cecily establishes clear boundaries, refusing uncontrolled violence while demanding respect alongside passion. Jeremy's acceptance shows growth as he learns to channel his intensity constructively. Their relationship transforms from potentially destructive to nuanced, maintaining primal energy while incorporating mutual understanding. The epilogue captures this transformation. Their campus chase games preserve the thrilling dynamic they crave, now ending with gentle aftercare and emotional intimacy. Jeremy transitions between dominant protector and tender partner, while Cecily embraces both strength and vulnerability. Can someone defined by darkness bring light into another's life? This paradox challenges our preconceptions about redemption and love. Jeremy remains violent and possessive, yet for Cecily, he becomes exactly what she needs, someone who sees her darkest desires without judgment and offers protection without demanding she diminish herself. Their relationship exists in a gray area beyond simple healthy, toxic labels. What makes their connection work is mutual acceptance. They see each other completely, darkness and all, and choose each other anyway. This becomes particularly evident when Cecily confronts her own capacity for darkness, with Jeremy serving as both catalyst and witness. Perhaps that's the most radical form of love, not the sanitized version in conventional romances, but the messy acceptance of another's whole self. God of Wrath suggests that sometimes the most unexpected people help us heal our deepest wounds. Sometimes the monster under the bed is exactly what we need to face the monsters within ourselves.